One of the things that you mentioned is that you wanted to branch out to maybe international relationships and building those. What was in your mind with that?
An interesting opportunity has emerged out of this. Our festival under Francis Xavier was known for its really innovative international programming. But international programming in person is incredibly expensive. Getting an artist here, visa fees, hosting them for, you know, usually over a week just because of timing and programming. And we haven't in the most recent years been able to do that in a great way, just as we are rebuilding our organization. And I'm running a pretty financially strict organization here. You know, I've been invited to a world, you know, world music showcases, provincial showcases, and obviously over the last year, those have all been virtual. But what has come out of that is enhanced relationships with international bookers. And as international artists are starting to produce their own online content, we are able to tap into that. And it is significantly more affordable than having an artist come in person. So where last year our programming was all regional, provincial, national, this year we'll be bringing some international acts back to the festival to present as part of our weekend of programming. We have had some international artists under my tenure. Most of them are ones that have more formally relocated to Canada in the last couple of years rather than directly. In 2017, I had a brilliant Korean group that we were able to tap into their tour. We had them present, which was phenomenal. They did Korean drumming and singing and string work. So that was a really exciting opportunity. And so this year, yeah, we've got some surprises up our sleeve with some international programming. I'm going to be excited to present.
All right. One more thing that I want to go over with you is how you are moving forward on the back end of the festival and working on things like policies, because this year, I think, has highlighted in a lot of ways how important protocol and policy can be to organizations, so that when something goes wrong, or they're not scrambling, essentially. That's one aspect that I found people have been really demanding this year, you know, prepare for crises instead of just sort of dealing with them as they come. Was that what pushed you to start doing more policy work, or was it something else?
We're a long-time organization, but our internal structures haven't kept up, I believe. We have a great basis of our policies and procedures. We have an amazing board helping to guide this. But what we haven't done is gone back through our policies and procedures and protocols to ensure that they support our goals of the organization and our emerging goals. One thing that this year has really highlighted is that it's not enough to present diverse voices in respectful ways. We have to be a dynamically active arts organization that actively promotes cross-cultural communication, that highlights diverse styles, performances, voices, that is open and accessible. And that means not just on our stages. That's almost the easiest part, if that makes sense. I work with a number of artists and organizations that have well-established relationships with Indigenous, BIPOC, second language communities. And I rely on volunteer curators to bring to my attention new and emerging voices in those areas. As an organization, though, we've challenged ourselves. We've sort of taken this on over the last few years under the umbrella of accessibility, to make sure that our stage is physically accessible, to make sure our site is physically accessible, to make sure that the way our website operates is accessible to people in other languages, to people with varying abilities of sight or hearing. We want to make sure that we're socially and economically accessible. So we brought in a pay what you can model for our Friday night of programming, which is why we continue to do that with our online programming. If there is a will and a desire to be involved in our event, we don't want somebody's wallet to limit their engagement. So that's been really important. We've looked at how we run things on site. So we worked with Van City to make sure that we were sustainable, environmentally sustainable. And we're under John Vissers. He's one of our board members and was our environmental coordinator for years. It first started under his leadership. And then Jen McGrath is another one of our board members, and she works with Van City and connected us with their green team. And we were able to get a grant from them to more fully look at how we managed waste on site. This was in 2019. And we're going to continue doing that kind of work. We want to be socially sustainable, environmentally sustainable, culturally sustainable. And one of the biggest things that we're looking at is how to be actively anti-racist. It's not one thing, and it's not just about not being racist and ensuring that our policies and our and the way we hire and the way we work with our volunteers and the way we work with our community is not racist, but we need to actively engage in relationships that are anti-racist. One of the things that we brought in our performer services area is we're slowly developing cultural riders. And where an artist comes onto site, they would, you know, normally say, I need water. This is the backline I need. I require vegetarian meals. That stuff is the easy stuff. What we're looking at is creating a program where we have cultural and social components to that now. So for example, if you're a family, that is a family band, and you have small children and you need childcare, we provide childcare as part of that because we don't think that there should be any barrier to an artist performing their music or their stories or their dance. And so if they need childcare, that shouldn't be a cost that they have to bear to perform at our festival. So we offer childcare. If part of an artist's culture is to smudge before a performance, where normally we have no open flame on site or, you know, no smoking, that sort of thing. If tobacco or smudging is part of their cultural tradition, that's 100% permitted. We talk about guest lists and those sorts of things. And normally, you know, there's a general rule of thumb around, you know, if you've got four artists, you get four guests, that kind of thing. But if an artist's culture means that aunties or uncles, or there's more than one grandparent, or, you know, that should be there as part of their performance, well, then that's going to happen. And we're going to look at our protocols and our policies and make sure that that kind of flexibility exists within it. And I think that in that way, we're kind of modeling the world we want to live in.
That's a lot of work as well. Learning about things like Van City, that's great that you got a waste audit grant. That's pretty major. These are a lot of projects, you know. Are you planning on launching any new ones or just finishing up the ones you got for this year?
This spring, we're embarking on a kids campaign where we're going to have four online shows that are geared towards our wee folks and their families. So it's tentatively entitled Rhythm and Moves. So it'll be sort of a beat percussion linked performances. So we'll do four of those over the spring, and we're working with Valley Tech, our longtime tech provider, to produce these. And then we also are committed to ongoing learning. And so we're looking at how we can develop a catalog of lesson-based workshops and Zooms and that sort of thing to keep the learning going. We want to be more than a festival. We want to continue our relationship with the District of Mission where we can, and the Mission Arts Center, and continue those relationships and deepen them. We want to expand in Abbotsford and see where we can partner with people like Jam and the Jubilee. But we want to continue to build these relationships. And you know, I want to see how the next 34 years are going to unfold.
34 years down the line, who knows what it'll even look like.
Right? We could have holograms.
Yeah, it sounds like 2021 is already something to look forward to.
I'm excited. I mean, it's, you know, I know we're all burnt out on online shows. But we're going to, you know, we're going to have some fun with it. And we have a pretty amazing festival family, and we are always welcoming new members. So there is that. And we're going to just look at fun ways to get the music out there.
Okay. Well, I think you've answered all of my questions. Michelle, was there anything that you wanted to touch on that we didn't go over today?
We will be gearing up for the festival, and it will be the weekend of July 23rd, 24th, and 25th in 2021. And we will be gathering virtually for sure. And fingers crossed, we'll have some feet in the park in some capacity.
All right. Looking forward to it. And I suppose we'll have to check up again closer to July.
Oh, 100%. We'll be knocking on your door.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Michelle. It was great to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's great to talk with you as well.